Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Learning. And today my guest is Amira Glazer, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in New York City. She teaches in the Union Square and area of Manhattan and Park Slope area of Brooklyn. She is currently, she's been an Alexander teacher for a number of years, and she's currently also pursuing her interest in traditional Chinese medicine, getting a degree in that. But earlier on, she had an extensive background in performing arts. She began acting at 8 years old. She studied movement, theater, production, and voice, and a great many of her students are performers. And we're going to talk today about how the Alexander Technique can be useful for performers. Amira, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Robert. Thanks for having me again.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on the program. And we did an earlier show, which is going to be a podcast soon, about traditional Chinese medicine. But today I thought it would be nice to talk about performers. I think it's... could you begin by giving our listeners a short description of the Alexander Technique?
Sure. One of the ways that F.M. Alexander himself described the Alexander Technique was as the study of human reaction. Mm-hmm. And when we're looking at what we're looking at in the Alexander Technique is our mental, physical, emotional habits, and what those are, how those come out when we're confronted with a stimulus in our life. So the technique is really this process that teaches us how to get into that moment between whatever the stimulus is and our habitual reaction to it, so that we can actually have a choice about how we want to respond. And that really points us right towards present moment awareness, which of course is something that performers really talk about a lot: how to be present, how to have stage presence, how to be able to be in the moment.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I would think for performers dealing with, there are all kinds of ways they could react to things that would not be good. I mean, they could have stage fright, for example, if they were a singer or an actor. There could be unexpected things that would happen, and they're going to need to respond quickly and efficiently to those developments.
Right. Absolutely.
I'm not a performer myself, other than occasional country and western singing, but I would think that for example, a dancer in a show, if someone doesn't do quite the right thing, they're going to have to deal with that on the spot efficiently. Go ahead.
You do when you're performing, you really just have that split second or that moment. If something goes wrong, or even if something goes right, but if something goes wrong, you just have a moment to respond, to choose your response. And one of the things I think is really interesting about the Alexander Technique is that by studying it, we really enable ourselves to be more spontaneous. And sometimes students, when they begin studying the technique, think all of these things. I have to think of letting my neck be free and my head move up and my width and my length and my breath. They don't immediately see, oh, this is going to help my spontaneity. But because we're such habitual creatures and we get so accustomed to being really responding unconsciously, that when we begin to break that down and look at what our habits are and how those responses are already conditioned, mm-hmm. We're really not acting spontaneously at all. We're acting in a pre-programmed kind of way. And through studying the technique, in my experience and for many of my students, all of a sudden there's this richness of being in the moment and being able to not be driven by your maybe habitual reaction to a scary moment or an intimidating moment, which could happen on or off stage, but being able to just find this openness that having having this experience of freeing your neck over and over again, it just happens, and you see the way through much more easily than you would have anticipated you could do, because you're really in the moment.
I wonder if you could relate that, because I mean, well, usually when people talk about the Alexander technique, it's sort of its best known benefits are helping people who have stress related conditions, and helping performers do their work more efficiently. Generally, there's not as much emphasis, I think, on what you've just been talking about. And I wonder if you could say a bit about how the technique actually accomplishes what you just described as being able to react more quickly and efficiently.
Well, being able to be in the moment.
In the moment, yeah.
Yeah, instead of in a pre-programmed moment.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Alexander technique, we're looking at, like I said in my current definition of the technique, we're looking at stimuli and how we react to it. So stimuli can be anything. I mean, it can be the phone ringing. It can be, for a performer, it can be an audition. It could be a high note in an aria. It can be something that we have, you know, anything that we might have a reaction to. And in the Alexander technique, and F.M. Alexander did, in a typical lesson, we're doing a lot of getting in and to and out of a chair. And my little logo even has a little chair in it. And people always say, well, what's this chair about? Why the chair? And I think that Alexander used the chair as a metaphor for life, in a certain sense, that we all get in and out of a chair, many of us, hundreds of times a day without thinking about it. It's something we do unconsciously. And as you know, people tend to do all sorts of things to sort of pull themselves out of alignment, or use extra effort to get themselves out, to get themselves back into the chair. And when people suffer chronic pain or even acute pain, they become aware that they're using a lot of effort to get into this chair, out of this chair. But many of us go through our lives without even thinking about that. So it becomes a great place in an Alexander lesson to start to examine what we do unconsciously and what we do habitually without thinking about it.
Right. Well, just to take that example, if I could elaborate on it a little bit. So people who are in pain, as you say, they realize that it's quite a task, for example, to stand up or sit down. But what they probably don't realize is why it's such a task. In other words, what are they doing that is creating all these barriers to efficient movement? And I guess you could also say barriers to ability to respond to the stimulus to stand up or to sit down efficiently.
Right.
And I guess what you're saying is, it's certainly true, a lot of Alexander technique lessons involve what's called chair work, and people standing up, sitting down, or just working with someone sitting in the chair. And I think the idea is that in terms of the stimulus issue that you've been talking about, is that stimulus, so let's say you're sitting in a chair and the phone rings across the room, and your mind is on that phone and answering it, and you just want to get to the phone where you can pick it up and talk. And what the Alexander technique can help you do is be aware of the process you use to get yourself onto your feet. And that may seem far removed from the demands of being on stage or whatever, but actually the skill you learn in one of those things can carry over to the other. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. And I think that is exactly what Alexander had in mind when he started getting people out of a chair and putting them back in it, or helping them to look at that process. Because for him, he was a performer, right? Mm-hmm. Alexander was an actor. He loved to perform, and the common theater at that time was long resuscitations. So he would recite for long periods of time. He loved Shakespeare, and he started losing his voice. And it was because he loved this career and because he was starting to be quite successful at it that he wasn't willing to stop there. He didn't want to just stop because he was losing his voice, just like someone doesn't always just want to stop because they're in pain and just not do anything anymore. They want to learn, what am I doing to cause this, and is there any way I can stop that? And so for Alexander, like you used the example of the stimulus of the phone ringing, for Alexander, his stimulus was that he wanted to speak. And for performers, right, they want to sing, they want to speak, they want to communicate. And it was a very strong stimulus for him. And I think the stronger the stimulus sometimes, the harder it can be to pause for a moment, to get in that headspace where we can really have a choice about our response. And so the process that Alexander went through to figure out how he could speak again without losing his voice, that is essentially what we call the Alexander technique now, I think, is, you know, we take that and we put it in chair work or in table work or in walking or reaching or bending, simple things that we tend to do a lot of in an Alexander lesson. And the stimulus is lower. It's habitual. It's there. So, you know, we don't think about it. We know how we get out of a chair, but it's a good place to start to look at how can we break those habits, because at that moment we're not on stage. We're not in front of, you know, a casting director, or we're not doing the thing that we're most passionate about. And so it's a great way to start to get into those moments and break down some of those habits to find what our habitual interference is with our natural easy use, so that we can then apply that to everything that we do. And for performers, that's their performance, right. Often, right?
Right. And I mean, it could, in terms of what goes on during an Alexander lesson, it could be other simple activities like walking or climbing stairs or something like that. I think the point is that you're helping someone recognize those patterns that come into play really quickly when confronted with a stimulus to, say, walk across the room or chop vegetables or whatever, in fairly non-threatening, non-tricky situations, everyday activities. And then once they've learned how to do that a bit, then it becomes a lot easier to work with them while they're actually singing or dancing or right. or whatever. And I think another thing that maybe is worth mentioning, you mentioned Alexander's own self-discovery process, which, as you say, is really what the Alexander technique is. One of his discoveries early on was that the patterns that got in the way of his voice, that the constrictive patterns, let's say, that got in the way, would actually preceded his actual speaking. In other words, he would have an idea that I'm going to say something, and immediately that pattern would come into play. So he had to be really proactive in dealing with that. He couldn't wait until until the first sound came out of his mouth to intervene usefully. He had to kind of be a little bit ahead of the curve.
Right. I mean, it's an important point, because it is that, it's really being in the moment. It's that split second where what we've already thought that we're going to do, our body knows how to do it. And so when it knows how to do it in a way that is not advantageous or even harmful to us, that's what we're interested in changing in the Alexander technique, so that in that split second, before the sound comes out of your mouth or before you pick up the bow of the violin, you have a different possibilities that await you.
Right.
That you can really choose. I like to talk about the Alexander technique as giving you a choice. So if you really choose to, you can always use the habit. And this actually does come up a lot sometimes, particularly with singers and some other musicians that I've worked with. of being so tied to what they know, the result they know they can get in their habitual way, mm-hmm. that they get very scared at first, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. to learn a different way. And, you know, I always reassure them, like, the habit's there. You know, if you decide you want the habit, it's really about having choice.
Having choice, absolutely. Yeah. And I think we'd be remiss in talking about the Alexander technique in performers, not to mention a related but somewhat different aspect of how the technique can help in terms of repetitive strain, injury, and that sort of thing, which musicians certainly are quite prone to. Where just the simple, even if they're totally comfortable being playing in public and so on, but performing that same basic movements many, many times a day, and if they're not doing those movements well, you can get all kinds of problems, stiff necks, stiff shoulders, and so on for violinists, and similar patterns for other musicians. I mean, that is probably the area, or one of the areas, that the technique is maybe even better known for.
Yeah, it's so useful for all types of musicians with injuries, and dancers also, that they're the habitual way of using themselves, or because of the repetition of movement, it really starts to wear on them, and can lead to, you know, can lead to all sorts of pain and injury. And so by thinking of yourself as an instrument, as well as the instrument that you're playing, and relearning to play the instrument of yourself, mm-hmm. You can really change that dynamic. And they're a lot like Alexander. Again, they really want to do what they're doing. And so for him, it was the challenge of, okay, if I don't want to stop what I'm doing, how do I change it so that I can continue in a more mm-hmm. easeful, more productive manner?
They want to do what they're doing, and often they're working in an extremely competitive environment.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because there are a lot of other people who want to do what they're doing,
that's right.
too.
That's
and
right.
so the demands, in a way, performers, I don't know quite how to put this, it seems to me that their issues are really kind of like everyone's issues, but magnified many times. I mean, ordinary folks like me, you know, have some of the people just living a regular life have those sorts of issues too. But with performers, everything is a little more hyper, I would say.
It's like the stakes are higher.
The stakes
right?
are higher. The yeah. demands are higher. The actual amount of physical work is often higher. The hours right. are longer. The judgment is more. The judgment is sharper and kind of directly impacts on your career, I would say, more dramatically,
and
your
yeah,
ability
yeah.
to do it. So everything's yeah. just taken up another level. And I mean, everything that you and I have talked about so far, of course, applies to anybody. We're all, in a sense, performers of some sort as we go through life. But performers of the kind we're talking about, they just have a lot more demands, a lot more to deal with in those areas, I would say.
Yeah, I think that's really true. And it also ties back to what you said at the very beginning, which is, you know, that for a lot of performers at all levels in their career, things like stage fright or audition fright, you mm-hmm. know, can be quite a big challenge. And mm-hmm. I think because the Alexander technique also, you know, through this study and everything we've been talking about, but the Alexander technique is so helpful in calming the nervous system and being able to not get taken up physically and therefore emotionally, mentally, in sort of almost these sort of out of body experiences we have mm-hmm. when we experience stress or panic. Mm-hmm. It can be incredibly grounding for performers. And I work a lot with the art of breathing work that Jessica Wolf, I think, mm-hmm. has talked about on your show, right?
Right? Yes, absolutely.
I work a lot with that with performers and did some of that work that Carl Stau was doing when I was performing in college too, to really help myself and now help my students to use the breath itself to calm the nervous system down, to prepare, to kind of clear the field, to be in that present moment, which if we can allow ourselves that calmness in sort of the center of the storm, mm-hmm. We can be more spontaneous, and we can often find that there's not so much fear in that moment, in the moment we're in. It's more about what might happen or what did happen. And that can be very effective, and a very effective tool for performers as well in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything that we have not covered that you would like to mention before we come to an end?
I think we did a good job of covering a lot of important aspects
I do. I'm kind of tempted to add a thought of my own here, if that's okay.
Yeah.
I did an interview some time ago with a woman in L.A. who is an actress who does kind of short commercial spots, I think. Mm-hmm. And apparently the audition process is you come in and you have to make your impression within about 30 seconds. And so you really have to be on your game in the moment, ready to go. And she, one of the things that she said was most dramatic about her after having Alexander lessons is that she just felt much more at ease, and she was basically a lot more successful in getting those parts. As you
That's
have,
right.
I mean, you know, yeah. to repeat an off-cited phrase, you in that field, and I think probably to a certain extent in many performing areas, you just don't get a second chance to make a first impression.
Right.
And in this case, she described the audition process, and it was just amazing. Like, everything just hinges on a few seconds.
And being, having that chance to be... To know that you're in the moment and
on your game.
I think it reminds me actually of one other thing I was thinking about when I was thinking about talking to you this evening. But is for actors in particular, they talk a lot about knowing what your neutral is, you know, mm-hmm. so that you can put on a character in 30 seconds or for an entire evening, and how when we're ruled by our habits, we don't always have a true neutral. You know, you'll hear criticism of actors that you can always tell it's such and such actor playing the part.
Right.
And so by helping to strip away all those conditioned habits, we can help people to just really take on whatever they want to take on, again, spontaneously, you know, be on their game. And again, with the breath, it's really amazing to watch people, performers who can take away, strip away the interference of their habits. And then when they're on their breath, it's like whatever that emotion is that they've studied, that they know in their character, if they're on their breath, it just flows out of them. It's that natural inspiration that just feeds. And then you see that. And that's what we want to see, you know, when we go to a performance or when we're performers. So it's really, really beautiful, too, to mm-hmm. watch.
And of course, you can get the same thing in a lot of other fields that maybe aren't called performance fields, say teaching, for example, or
public speaking,
but just, you know, we are performers in our lives. Well, maybe this is a good place to end the conversation. My guest today has been Amira Glazer, who's an Alexander Technique teacher in New York City. And if what we've been talking about intrigues you and you live anywhere in the New York area, we'll put a link to Amira's website by the interview. And if you live anywhere else in the world and want to explore the technique a little more or find a teacher in your area, we'll put a link to another website that will allow you to do that. Amira, thanks so much for being on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. It was great fun speaking with you.